thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2020, and you're listening to episode 179, which is a conversation about the Adult Swim animated series, Rick and Morty. On this episode, I'm joined by longtime Christian Research Journal author, Robert Velarde, who is the author of several books, including A Visual Defense, Conversations with C.S. Lewis, and The Wisdom of Pixar. He received his M.A. from Southern Evangelical Seminary and has served as an adjunct faculty member at Denver Seminary. Robert has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Rick and Morty, Scientism, Self-Centeredness, and the Search for Meaning. You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Robert, it's good to have you on.
Great to be on, Melanie.
Well, Rick and Morty is one of these adult, quote-unquote, cartoons. It's on Adult Swim, and it's kind of interesting. I knew that it was very popular, especially with younger generations. As a matter of fact, I'm in a Facebook group for Christians and nerds, and there's a lot of, you know, I'd say millennials in that group. And I mentioned that I was very offended by watching some of these episodes, and I guess that shows my age because everyone went on about how good it was, and just, I mean, that yes, there's offensive parts of it, but it really makes you think. And then another friend who's a youth pastor said that he uses it a lot as examples in some of his worldview classes that he teaches at a Christian homeschool. So I'm sure he has to edit certain things, but he just mentions the episodes. But tell us a little bit more about Rick and Morty, because it was hard for me to get through some of the episodes. Some of the humor is very juvenile and offensive, and I guess later seasons got better. I started out with season one, and I was just immediately put off.
Well, you know, I found out about Rick and Morty through three of my adult children who fit this demographic. These are my children who are 18, 20, and 25, and they're well-grounded Christian individuals and obviously can point out a lot of the worldview and consistencies and things in the show. But it definitely does have that appeal to the 18 to 34-year-old demographic. They do tend to draw some older viewers. You know, it's basically an animated science fiction program. And like you said, it airs on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim, which obviously is not intended for kids. And most of the programs center around Rick, who's the grandfather, and he's a scientist. And he goes on these many adventures, usually with his grandson, Morty, who's in high school. And they go through these different dimensions or alternate universes. And the show's really made up about what they experience in those different adventures that they have.
Well, you just mentioned that it's not a show for kids, you know, not only because of its outlet, but just the nature of what it covers. Why do you think it appeals to that millennial set? Now, some people might not know, but one of the executive producers, Dan Harmon, if anyone has ever watched the television show Community, he was the executive producer of that as well. So he definitely has, you know, experience running different kinds of shows, but this particular show of his has really taken off. And last fall, I was reading an article where it said that they've renewed this show for 70 more episodes and they have just started season four. So who are they really trying to reach? And I'm assuming that the audience is even growing if they're committed to so much more content in the future.
Well, that's true. And, you know, what really got my attention to want to find out more about the show and write about it from the perspective of Christianity was when I saw that they had released a Super Bowl commercial featuring Rick and Morty. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, selling Pringles. And here you have an audience of 100 million people suddenly being introduced to this cultural phenomenon. As far as why people are drawn to it, I think that's a good question, you know. I would turn to French scientist and philosopher Blaise Pascal. He wrote, "The only thing that consoles us for our miseries is diversion." Whether that's true in every case or not, I don't necessarily think it is. There's certainly some value to leisure and recreation. But I think a lot of people lack a well-grounded worldview. And as such, they turn to programs like Rick and Morty to offer them some kind of diversion, or even some kind of paradoxically a non-explanation of reality. It's just to show that You know, it's fast paced. It can be watched in 22 minutes or so. You know, the animation is well done. And, you know, it does have its moments where it's very clever and funny, you know, despite, as you mentioned, some of the violence or even the crude language going on.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about who the main characters are and kind of set up just the background of the going on these various different, you know, sci-fi adventures?
Yeah, the main character, really, I would classify as Rick. He's described as a 70-year-old scientist, and he is living with his daughter, who's married, and with his two grandchildren. That would be Morty, who plays a key role in the program, and Morty's sister Summer in some later episodes begins to get more involved in these adventures that they have. Rick is essentially an alcoholic. You know, he's portrayed as a brilliant man. You know, he's an inventor. He's a thinker in the area of science, but he's really dysfunctional in a lot of ways. He, as I mentioned, is an alcoholic. He tends to be very abusive or dismissive of other people just because he sees himself as sort of the pinnacle of wisdom or scientific knowledge. Morty kind of just goes along on these adventures. And as I mentioned in an article I wrote about Rick and Morty, what's somewhat interesting is that the children, the grandchildren in this show, who are both high school students, tend to be the very, what little there is of a moral center to the show tends to come from the grandchildren, who kind of point out at times, hey, this doesn't seem right what you're doing, to their grandfather. So it's kind of a topsy-turvy thing going on there with the kids sort of directing the morality. And then you have Rick's daughter, Beth, who is a doctor, and her husband, who I believe at least in most of the first few seasons is just sort of an out-of-work individual. It's an interesting family dynamic going on with them.
Yeah, I think his daughter is a veterinarian or something, or a doctor for horses.
Yeah, she's a doctor for horses, which, you know, her husband tends to make fun of, that she's like not a real doctor. And so there's some tension going on there. And, you know, in a sense, it's a sitcom in some ways, but, you know, set in this fantastic science fiction sort of world.
So what are some of the key ideas that are explored in the show? I do find it unusual that the main protagonists are this grandfather and a teenager, his grandson, and they're the main focal points of these various different adventures. And as a matter of fact, the show has gotten so big, like you mentioned, the commercial, the Super Bowl commercial, but in addition, they have done so much merchandise for Rick and Morty. There's t-shirts and all kinds of different things that they've done that they have such a big fan base. So what are some of the key ideas that the show explores?
Well, you know, like I said, it's fast paced. You know, you've got 22 minute episodes. Some of them, in fact, most of them probably are self-contained, but they do have some recurring ideas that are coming about. One of them is this idea of the multiverse, that there are sort of these infinite number of universes, of which our universe is just one. There's the concept that nothing really matters. You know, personal gain is what's important. At least for Rick, there's this underlying pursuit of pleasure where he's pretty much looking out just for himself. And I would add, too, that there's an emphasis on science as being the only means of understanding reality. So Rick tends to dismiss anything that has, for instance, to do with religion or philosophy or other explanations of reality.
I found it interesting that in one of the episodes that I watched, you know, you normally think that there would be dismissive of God, but it was this whole episode focused on the devil and really trying to be dismissive of just anything that, whether it was supernatural or anything connected to religion, even if it was something that was quote unquote a bad thing. And just a big put down of all of that. So I thought that was very fascinating and how science comes to save the day, even in that context of the theme of selling your soul to the devil. And so with regard to these various different themes that they have, why do you think that some of these worldviews that are you've just mentioned are so interesting to people or attract people that they would want to, you know, continue to watch this show? It's on a season 4, after all.
Sure. And I think, at least for Rick, you know, he has this brand of what I call nihilism that is more, he views it more as liberating. You know, there are certain types of nihilists that will come to the point of saying that, well, gee, this understanding that there's no meaning to the universe, there's no real purpose, leads to despair or leads to feeling horrible about yourself and why go on. But some nihilists, and I would classify Rick like this, as someone who is more liberated by his nihilism. He just figures, well, what the heck, I'll go out and do what I want and be what I want, and since nothing matters, that's life. And you know, this kind of goes hand in hand with what I'd call his ethical egoism, you know, just centered on doing whatever is right to be for his advantage. And you know, as far as the draw of it, I think people are just confused in many ways and wanting to find something that can sort of divert their attention, maybe give them some entertainment. And you know, frankly, there's a kind of a lack of intellectualism in society as a whole, and not really giving too much thought to this. It's just sort of like, well, let's just watch this show and go on to the next thing. And in fact, there are even a couple of episodes where Rick tunes into what he calls interdimensional cable television, and it's just sort of going on from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, without a whole lot of context. In some ways, it's really just kind of this postmodern thing that Neil Postman, I think, would write about, where you have a very disjointed media and things just kind of come at you from different directions.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Robert Velarde. He's written an online exclusive feature article, which you can read completely free at our website, equip.org. And Robert's article is called Rick and Morty: Scientism, Self-Centeredness, and the Search for Meaning. We'd also like to invite you to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, which you can do for $33.50 at our website, equip.org. And also, we'd like you to help us keep our content free. It's really essential that we find partners that'll help us keep our content free, like this podcast, which is more than 175 episodes already, and they're all completely free. Please help us by maybe giving us a tip of $3, $5, $10, something that would equal, you know, a meal out or takeout or something like that. You can do that very easily if you go to our website, equip.org, and you go to the section that says magazine. If you click that drop-down menu, it says Postmodern Realities Podcast. You'll go to a landing page. You can find this episode or any episode and find the link to give us a tip. But most importantly, what helps us keep this content free is to help other people discover our content. And the way that they do that is through reviews that you can do wherever you get your podcasts, or specifically at Apple Podcasts, search for Postmodern Realities Podcast. And I know you've been thinking about it. Hey, I've got to give them a review, but you haven't gotten around to it. So will you just take a few minutes right now and give us a review? The best way you can review us is with a written review, but it's really easy to just hit the stars and give us a starred review as well. And thank you for your essential partnership.
You're just mentioning the episode where they're going kind of surfing cable in different multiverses or whatever. I also was wondering, I mean, some of the stuff that they were surfing was so incredibly profane. I was just wondering who even thinks up this stuff. And so, you know, it is kind of a little bit mind-boggling to me. There's a lot of cultural references to other older shows that they make kind of profane and think it's funny. And so these particular characters of Rick and Morty, why do you think people are drawn to them particularly? I mean, I feel like Morty's that nerd underdog, but yet his grandfather puts him down all the time. So what causes people to be particularly drawn to them?
Well, I think there's some underlying interest in what's going to happen to these characters. You know, at what point are they going to, you know, go separate ways or have some kind of conflict? And there already have been some episodes where they run into themselves. You know, as again, I said, there's this multiverse theory going on. So there's, you know, an infinite number of other Ricks, an infinite number of other Mortys. You know, in one reality, this Morty has sort of turned evil and wants to sort of topple this whole system that's going on, where, you know, Morty's seen as sort of this subservient character. So, you know, you do have these underlying threads of like, well, what's going to happen to them? And they've already gone in some directions in the program that have been kind of disturbing. You know, in one episode, something happens that causes that whole world to essentially fall apart and become this post-apocalyptic situation. And Rick just kind of gives up on it and says, well, it's time for us to leave and go to this other universe where you and I are about to die and we'll just take their place. So this whole concept of the multiverse, you know, it's not so much a worldview, but, you know, this theory about reality. And I'm not an expert in multiverse theory, but it seems to me that all the problems of attempting to explain one universe without God are just compounded in this multiverse. You know, you've got this whole problem of intelligent design or the problem of the impersonal giving rise to the personal. And of course, you know, it's a science fiction show and they use that to great effect. But really, if you look at this multiverse theory, it's, I think, an interesting draw to the program. But, you know, looking at it more carefully, it just doesn't hold up well.
Well, of course, as we mentioned, Rick is basically a central character of the show, the grandfather. How would you describe him? I found him to be quite repulsive, and so I'm still not understanding how people find him fascinating, and so much so that they're going to have 70 more episodes of Adventures with Rick.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting perspective. You know, a typical protagonist is not put in this kind of light where we have Rick as kind of this anti-hero. And if you look at the role of scientists in film or television over the years, I mean, going even as far back to the silent film Metropolis, you kind of have this mad scientist persona building up. But if you look at something like the Back to the Future films, you know, at least you have in Doc Brown, this scientific character who's likable, you know, whereas in Rick, you have, you know, he's constantly burping and drinking alcohol and, you know, pursuing essentially what would be, you know, hedonistic tendencies. You know, he's very intelligent, devoted to his life of science, but his central focus is on himself. So, you know, perhaps there's something going on there with our society's narcissistic tendencies, you know, the rise of social media and whatnot, this focus on, well, we're the center of our own universe. We look out for ourselves. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm just speculating that might be a draw for the target audience for this show.
So how would you characterize the ethics of Rick and Morty? Because they find themselves in some very questionable situations.
Well, that's a good question. I would say that a lot of the morality of Rick and Morty kind of stems from this nihilist underpinning, you know, this view of reality that says, well, nothing really matters. There's no purpose or direction to things, which tends to lead to a rejection of any traditional moral codes. In Rick and Morty, this tends to result in this sort of moral relativism, or more so in the case of Rick, what we'd call ethical egoism, which is an ethical system that's just based on self-interest, where, you know, right and wrong are decided on the basis of whether a moral action is in the best interest of the person making that choice. And the difficulty there, which actually occurs in one of the episodes, where Rick's ethics sort of conflict with another character's ethics, and, you know, Rick is upset about that. You know, he's like, well, when I said to look out for number one, I meant me, not you. So that's sort of one of the weaknesses of ethical egoism, is how do you sort of arbitrate, or what oversees what is right and wrong? And there really isn't, you know, a good arbiter of that within ethical egoism. And again, you know, we have the children, the grandchildren in the show sort of being the moral center. One episode involves Rick selling a weapon to an assassin, and this very much bothers Morty, who thinks this is wrong. You know, why do you want to do that? And in Rick's mind, it's sort of like, well, I need to make some money so I can go play at the arcade, or if I don't sell it to him, somebody else will. And Morty is very disturbed by this. You know, he's wondering, well, shouldn't we value all life? And of course, Rick, having no real ethical center, just kind of dismisses any ethical objections that Morty might have.
So how does the philosophy of this program, Rick and Morty, and specifically Rick probably, how does it contrast with a Christian worldview?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. You know, in Rick and Morty, we have this world that has no purpose, has no meaning. It just really has no foundation, where science, you know, is sort of the grand explanation of everything. And in Christianity, you know, is quite the contrast. You know, we have, you know, a moral source, you know, a moral lawgiver. You know, God exists. God has brought order to the universe. We are, you know, made in God's image. Therefore, we do have value and moral worth. We have a foundation in Christianity of love that moves us to, you know, outwardly, you know, we love God and we love others. There's this very opposite Christian ethics to ethical egoism that is centered on loving others. And, you know, not to get anything out of it, but because it's the right thing to do as God has modeled for us in his word. And Rick and Morty just doesn't have that. They are just sort of lost in a universe that has no rational explanation and no real meaning or purpose to them. You know, the contradiction that I see in Rick and Morty is they want to have it both ways. They want to have the nihilism and the meaninglessness, but they also want to have meaningful, loving relationships, which the worldview of Rick and Morty just doesn't support.
In your article about Rick and Morty, you mentioned the show's emphasis on hedonism. And what are some examples of that specifically?
Yeah, I would say the key episode that discusses that is an episode called Autoerotic Assimilation. And this features Rick, who sort of runs into a being, an entity, you might call it, that he used to date, for lack of a better word. And this creature sort of assimilates entire worlds. And Rick ends up on this planet where this creature has assimilated this world and really just runs rampant with his hedonism. He's just seeking to maximize his pleasure in whatever way he sees fit. You know, the problem with hedonism, I mean, there's multiple problems, but one thing philosophically is called the hedonist paradox. And essentially what the hedonist paradox says is that there are a lot of things in life that don't result in pleasure, that are very challenging or very difficult, such as, you know, raising a child, or maybe even the work that you do for a living. So in other words, you can have these significant pleasures in life that actually do involve pain, but we don't avoid these things. We pursue them because the results are worthwhile, such as raising a child. So some of these, you know, things that Rick does in pursuit of just maximizing his pleasure, eventually, you know, philosophically, they break down. It's just not going to work. It will result in really his self-destruction, which is nearly what happens in that particular episode.
So what is scientism and how do you see it play out in Rick and Morty?
Well, scientism is really, there's a couple of angles to it. There's like a hard scientism and what you might call a softer scientism. Rick and Morty really presents what J.P. Moreland and William Lane Craig would call more of a hard scientism. They define this as the view that science is the very paradigm of truth and rationality. In other words, when we turn to an explanation of reality, science is, you know, exclusively the best model for understanding things. The problem with that is that this sort of scientism is self-refuting, because in a way, scientism itself is a philosophy about understanding reality that can itself be proven scientifically. Moreover, I would add, you know, as C.S. Lewis put it, he said, supposing science ever became complete so that it knew every single thing in the whole universe, is it not plain that the questions, why is there a universe? Why does it go on as it does? Has it any meaning? Would remain just as they were. In other words, science has limitations. Yes, it can do a lot in its realm, but there are questions beyond it that other disciplines need to take over and can tackle better.
Well, Rick and Morty does portray love, but in your article, you call that expression of love kind of paradoxical in the show. And why would that be?
Well, I think given the foundation of this nihilistic view that there's no meaning or purpose, You know, Rick and Morty also wants to try and retain love and the value of meaningful relationships. I think they do that mainly for a couple reasons. You know, it makes for a better television program if you have these caring relationships among characters, and it makes for better storytelling. But within its worldview, it's really paradoxical to have both. If nothing matters and there's no meaning to reality, then why is love an exception? You know, in fact, worldviews have to essentially borrow, or even you might say steal, from Christianity in order to have love within their worldviews. You know, Christianity has this foundation of love. You know, it's rooted in God and his nature. You know, as I said before, Christians are to love God and neighbor. In other words, far from focusing on self, Christians are to love others. And we have this meaningful foundation for it. But when you try to force love into a worldview like nihilism, it just doesn't work. It contradicts itself.
Well, one thing I want to ask you is, do you think Christians should watch the show? Now, I have interacted with a whole bunch of millennial Christians that do watch the show. And so if they're Christians that watch the show, how can we respond to fans of Rick and Morty? I mean, those people realize, the ones that I interacted with, that younger generation, they realize what it was teaching, but they were still fans of the show. So how can Christians kind of use this series for people who aren't Christians as a springboard for Christianity? And can you even recommend Christians to watch it?
Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, three of my adult children had watched the program. And again, they're in that demographic of, you know, millennials. And they stopped watching it on their own because they, you know, as one of my children, my 20-year-old, said, you know, it just gets mean. The show gets meaner. And I think from that, I got the impression that, well, yeah, you know, the character of Rick gets mean. He's bitter. And there, I think at some point, you know, Christians who are well-grounded are probably going to say, well, you know, what is the value in continuing to watch this show? Now, if you want to watch it now and then, or from a perspective of Christian apologetics, or to engage in evangelism, or to understand what's going on in the culture, you know, I would still give the caveat that the show at times is, you know, very vulgar, very crude, very violent. So I think for those who are non-Christians who are watching this show, which, you know, there are millions of them, it's gained such popularity, I think what we should not do is to come across as critical and judgmental or just dismissive. I think we need to listen, we need to ask questions, we need to try to find out why someone appreciates the show. And also, you know, we need to distinguish between what we might call the production values of the show versus maybe some of the intellectual content. In other words, can we find something to praise about the show? Well, the animation is well done, the music is well done, the voice acting is good. But what about the intellectual ideas? You know, what are they saying? And do they logically make sense? Or can we point out some of the contradictions in the worldview of Rick and Morty? Or even going further, you know, is there any real contribution that the show is making to ideas? And, you know, if so, what are they?
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Robert. And so, Robert, we're in a quarantine pretty much across this country, not just this country, the whole world right now. And I saw an article in the New York Times talking about the rise in sales of all kinds of comfort and junk food. So now that you're quarantined at home, are you eating healthy food or comfort food?
Oh boy, I would say it's a mix. You know, we did our big grocery trip to Costco a few weeks ago, trying to get whatever we could to not have to go out and get groceries again. But I got to say, the Easter candy, the chocolates, the Cadbury eggs, yeah, those are going pretty quick around the house.
And what's something that you are watching during this quarantine or revisiting and watching that you could recommend for Christians?
Oh boy, you know, with so much on now and so much that's been streaming, gosh, I'm trying to think about something that I've watched recently that would fill that category. Well, of course, I'm watching the new Star Trek Picard show, partly to do an article again for you guys. So that, you know, is definitely, you know, an escape, science fiction, kind of revisiting the Star Trek world. And, you know, although I've heard it's been very divisive among fans, I got to say, you know, Patrick Stewart remains an excellent actor. So fun to watch for sure.
Well, one thing that is in short supply during this quarantine is toilet paper, and it's really interesting. I read an article about a journalist who kind of delved into it, and he found out that it really has to do more with not just the fact that people are hoarding, but that people aren't at work and using commercial toilet paper. So now all the toilet paper that they make for home use, it's hard to keep up with demand, which eventually will go down when people are back to their normal schedules and using the bathroom at other places besides their home. So my question for you is, at your house, do you guys put your toilet paper on going over or under on your toilet paper roll dispenser?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, we're the ones who go over, and I think we're well stocked, but you know, part of that is just having six people in my house, and you know, you just have to have the bathroom supplied.
Well, thanks, Robert, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks, Melanie. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Robert Velarde, who has written an online exclusive feature article for us, and it is called Rick and Morty: Scientism, Self-Centeredness, and the Search for Meaning. And you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org.
We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.